Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast, International Organizations Immunity Act Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On October 31st, 2018, the Supreme Court heard argument in JAM versus International Finance Corporation, a case involving the scope of the International Organizations Immunities Act. The International Finance Group, IFC, is an international organization which provides loans to projects in developing countries that do not have the necessary private capital for projects. Under the International Organizations Immunities Act, IOIA, the IFC is an organization designated to, quote, enjoy the same immunity from suit as is enjoyed by foreign governments, except to the extent that such organizations may expressly waive their immunity for the purpose of any proceedings or by the terms of any contract. The IFC funded the construction of the Tata Mundra power plant in Gujarat, India, with a proviso that the plant had to follow an environmental and social action plan to protect the surrounding community. Failure to follow the plan would result in a loss of financial support. The power plant did not follow the plan, but the IFC did not revoke funding. Members of the surrounding community sued the IFC in district court, claiming that the IFC is responsible for their injuries because it continued funding the project despite the plant's clear failure to follow the environmental and social action plan. The district court dismissed the complaint on the grounds that the IFC was immune from suit. The petitioners appealed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, which agreed with the district court. The U.S. Supreme Court then granted certiorari to address whether the International Organizations Immunity Act, which affords international organizations the, quote, same immunity from suit that foreign governments have, Title 22 of the United States Code, Subsection 28A, confers the same immunity on such organizations as foreign governments have under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, Title 28 of the United States Code, Subsections 1602 to 1611. And now, to discuss the case, we have Mike Ramsey, Professor of Law at the University of San Diego School of Law.
This case poses an interesting dilemma of statutory interpretation. It's also important as a practical matter concerning the ability to sue international organizations in U.S. court. As a disclosure, I note that I joined an amicus brief of law professors in support of the International Finance Corporation in this case. As background, the plaintiffs are represented by Mr. Jam and are Indian nationals who live near a power plant in India and claim injuries from the operation of the plant. The International Finance Corporation, or IFC, is an international organization headquartered in Washington, D.C., that makes loans to finance infrastructure projects, in this case, the power plant that's allegedly harming the plaintiffs. Now, in the case, the IFC says that it has immunity from suit under the International Organizations Immunity Act, or IOIA, 28 U.S.C. 288A, which is a federal statute passed in 1945. Jam says that it does not. And here's the issue. The IOIA says that international organizations such as the IFC, quote, shall enjoy the same immunity from suit as is enjoyed by foreign governments. But does that mean the same immunity that foreign governments had in 1945 when the IOIA was passed, or the same immunity that foreign governments currently have? This matters because in 1945, foreign governments had virtually absolute immunity from suit in U.S. courts. But in 1976, Congress passed the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, which substantially reduced foreign sovereign immunity, especially for foreign commercial activities. As the Supreme Court has defined commercial activities, it seems likely that the IFC's activities of loaning to private commercial enterprises like power plants are included and therefore are not immune. Now, plaintiffs say that the natural way to read the statute, the IOIA, that is that international organizations get whatever immunity foreign governments have from time to time. Otherwise, why wouldn't Congress just say that they have absolute immunity directly? The IFC, on the other hand, says that the point of the IOIA was to encourage international organizations to locate in the United States without fear of litigation exposure. And thus the point was indeed to give them essentially absolute immunity. There's two further wrinkles. First, the IOIA also has a provision that allows the president to lift the immunity of an international organization if the president thinks that immunity isn't consistent with the organization's mission and operations. Now, I think this is a key point favoring the IFC. It's consistent with the IOIA rule being absolute immunity. The statute establishes absolute immunity subject to a presidential waiver, which allows the president to balance fairness to litigants against U.S. national security and foreign policy interests. The amicus brief that I joined emphasized this argument in support of the IFC. But oddly, the U.S. executive branch submitted a brief arguing the opposite. That is, the president says that the IFC and other international organizations have the reduced immunity provided to foreign governments in the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, and not the absolute immunity that existed when the IOIA was passed in 1945. What's odd about that is that reading greatly reduces the president's power to shape international organizations' immunity. We don't typically expect the president to argue for a reduction of presidential power, but that's what's happened in this case. The outcome's hard to predict. At oral argument, the justices were quieter than usual. Justice Breyer was the most active, and he seemed most concerned with the practical concern that ruling for the plaintiffs would expose the IFC to too much litigation and impair its operations. On the other side, Justices Kagan and Gorsuch seemed inclined towards the plaintiff's textual argument. The court tends to defer to the executive in foreign affairs cases, so the executive's support of the plaintiffs seems significant. But on the other hand, in other areas, the court's majority has been skeptical of foreign litigants using U.S. courts to redress foreign injuries, which is what's happening in this case. For example, in the alien tort statute cases such as Kiobo and Jesner, the court has ruled against foreign plaintiffs trying to use the U.S. courts to redress foreign injuries. And so this may weigh in favor of the IFC in this case as well. I, therefore, am not going to make a prediction. We will see how it comes out. In sum, John versus IFC is an important practical case about the exposure of international organizations to suit in U.S. courts, especially development banks and other international organizations engaging in commercial activities, such as the IFC. But more broadly, it's a great case about a classic dilemma of interpretation. When a statute or a constitution refers to a set of circumstances, such as in this case, the immunity of foreign governments, does it mean those circumstances as they exist when the statute was passed? Or does it mean those circumstances as they may evolve from time to time in the future? That's the classic dilemma the Supreme Court's going to be faced with in John versus IFC, and I will be particularly interested to see what they have to say about it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.